So this summer, we're going to be going through the book of Proverbs. Now, there's no way we can go through all of the book of Proverbs. We're just going to, you know, pick up some different topics. I'm going to do some of it. Some other people from the leadership team and Rocky and the staff members here are going to teach. And so it'll be a kind of a scattering of various mishmash. Brenda wanted to call it potpourri, and I can't say that word. See, even then I couldn't say it. So I said, no, we're not going to call it potpourri. We're going to call it mishmash. So the mishmash of Proverbs. Proverbs is almost a 3,000-year-old book. And it's a fun book. There's so many things in it. And just think for a minute with me. It's been read by millions, billions down through the centuries. It's been read. And I'll list some of them in just a couple of minutes. But this thing has been read and read and read and read in all kinds of different languages. And because of the different languages, the nuances of the languages. But it is just filled with incredible stuff. It was written by Solomon, or not written by Solomon. Some of them were, but collected by Solomon. So 3,000 years ago, Solomon was the third king of Israel. He was the son of David, and his immoral relationship with Bathsheba, which is a whole story, in the scriptures. And so Solomon is their son, and he becomes the third king of Israel. And he was known for his wisdom. Is one of the things he was known for. Now it's interesting. He's known for his wisdom, but if you follow his life all the way through, he made some pretty poor choices. I mean, he's just like, where was that wisdom that you wrote about? Where's that wisdom you collected? You know, what happened there? And probably the one of the stories that he's most famous for about the wisdom. And what happened was, one night when he first became king, God spoke to him in a dream and said, ask for me anything you want. And what he asked for was wisdom to lead the children of Israel, is what he asked for. And God says, I'm going to give you not only wisdom, but I'm going to give you riches beyond imagination. And then people traveled from all over the known world at that point to see him and to get him to answer things and so on. But this is probably one of the most famous parts about stories about his wisdom. He says, sometime later, this is after God said, I'm going to give you this wisdom. And he says, sometime later, two prostitutes came to the king to have an argument settled. Please, my lord, one of them began. This woman and I live in the same house. So it's just this, it's all the setup here. We live in the same house. I gave birth to a baby while she was with me in the house. And 3 days later, this woman also had a baby. We were alone there, only two of us in the house. But her baby died during the night when she rolled over on it. Then she got up in the night and took my son from beside me while I was asleep. And she laid her dead child in my arms and took mine to sleep beside her. And in the morning when I tried to nurse my son, he was dead. But when I looked more closely in morning light, I saw that it was not my son at all. Then the other woman interrupted, it certainly was your son, and the living one is mine. No, the two women said, and the living child is mine, the dead one is yours. And they argued back and forth between the king. Now, can you imagine what that looked like? I mean, they're going back, it's mine, no, it's mine. No, you know, they're arguing back and forth. Yeah, I'll leave it at that. Then the king said, let's get the facts straight. Both of you claim the living child is yours, and each says that the dead one belongs to the other. All right, then bring me a sword. So a sword was brought to the king. Then he said, cut the living child in two and give half to one and half to the other. Like, wow, I would have never come up with that. It's not the answer I would like, just chop them in half and give half of it. I would have never come up with it. And then the woman who was the real mother of the living child and who loved him very much cried out, oh no, my lord, give her the child. Please do not kill him. But the other woman said, all right, he will be neither yours nor mine. Divide him in two, you know, between us. And then the king said, do not kill the child, but give it to the woman who wants the child to live, for she is his mother. And when all Israel heard the king's decision, the people were in awe of the king, for they saw that the wisdom of God had been given for rendering justice. One of the most famous stories in the scriptures about Solomon's wisdom. And here's what I want you to grab a hold of. If you've never heard that story or some of those, the Bible has all kinds of those stories in it, and you ought to read your Bible, okay? Because there's like really? I mean, they're like going to chop a baby in half? Yeah, it's in there. And the Bible's got all kinds of that, like, weird stuff. Okay? And you ought to, again, you ought to read your Bibles. Solomon collected 3,000 Proverbs over his lifetime. Collected 3,000. The book of Proverbs only has 800 of them. So somehow we lost, you know, 2,200 of them. He wrote 1,000 songs. And it says this. It says he could speak, this is 1 Kings 4. He says he could speak with authority about all kinds of plants, from the cedars of Lebanon to the tiny hyssop that grows in the cracks in a wall. He could also speak about animals and birds, small creatures and fish. And the kings from every nation sent their ambassador to listen to the wisdom of Solomon. He's the guy that collected the book of the Proverbs that are in the book of Proverbs. So again, just for a second, think about down through history. And I just have listed some. Isaiah read Proverbs. So when you read Proverbs, you're reading the exact same Proverbs that Isaiah read. Jeremiah, Daniel, Ezekiel. Then you go into, I don't know if you ever thought about this, but Jesus read the Proverbs. Matter of fact, it says of Jesus, you remember that event where Jesus and Joseph and Mary went to Jerusalem for the Passover, and while they're at the Passover, then Joseph and Mary start heading back, and what does it say of Jesus? I mean, he confounded, when they went back to Jerusalem to find Jesus, they found him talking to all the rabbis, and it says he was confounding them. He's a 12-year-old. He's confounding them. But it goes on to say, and Jesus continued to grow in wisdom. So just think about that. Jesus grew in wisdom, and one of the ways he grew in wisdom was probably from reading the book of Proverbs. He read it. Paul read it. Peter read it. Mary read it. Augustine read it. St. Francis read it. Martin Luther, John Calvin, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln is known for regularly reading the book of Proverbs. And we would say, most of us would probably say he might have been our greatest president. And he read this book of Proverbs. Frederick Douglass, Theodore Roosevelt, John F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King Jr. I could just go on and on and on. When you are reading the book of Proverbs, you're reading the exact same thing all of those people read. So today I'm going to give just some introductory thoughts about Proverbs and kind of the purpose of them, and I got a bunch of different things to give you. It's kind of an introduction thing. You know, when people think about the Scriptures, they often think that the Scriptures are mostly about heaven and about getting people to heaven. That's oftentimes what people think it's mostly about, and it is about that. There's no doubt about it. That is what it's about. Or sometimes people think the Scriptures are about the story of redemption. That's what they're about. Or they're a blueprint for future living and so on. That's what they're about too. But if we catalog everything the Scripture says, if we took and cataloged everything the Scripture says, the Scriptures say more about everyday living than they say about anything else. They say more about how to live life on this planet, not about life on another planet. Or on the new heavens and the new earth, or whatever heaven, you know, whatever that looks like, the place between now and the new heavens and the new earth. The Bible has more to say about everyday practical living. What does life look like here on this planet? And that's part of what Proverbs is all about. Here's what Proverbs, how it starts. It'll be up on your screen. It says, these are the Proverbs of Solomon, David's son, king of Israel. Their purpose is to teach people wisdom and discipline, to help them understand the insights of the wise. Their purpose is to teach people to live disciplined and successful lives, to help them do what is right and just and fair. These proverbs will give insight to the simple, knowledge and discernment to the young. Let the wise listen to these proverbs and become even wiser. Let those with understanding receive guidance by exploring the meaning of these proverbs and parables, the words of the wise and their riddles. As I read that, and as you read it up on the screen, did you catch any of those that, like, I could use some of that? I could become more wise. I could become more disciplined. I could become more discerning. Did anybody catch, you know, like, I could get there. And if you notice down in verse 6 part, it says, and let him who has understanding, what? Learn even more. See, we can get to the place where we think we got it all, but there's more to learn. There's so much more to learn. And Proverbs actually uses the word wisdom, and that's what Proverbs is about, you know, about. It's about teaching wisdom. It uses the word wisdom 86 times. in the book of wisdom. Just over and over and over, here's this word. Like Proverbs 4:7 says this, getting wisdom is the wisest thing you can do. I love that line. Getting wisdom is like the wisest thing you can do. And hopefully, as you read the book of Proverbs, I'm going to challenge you at the end. As you read the book of Proverbs this summer, and as we go through it, myself and other teachers, that maybe your wisdom, your level of wisdom will grow. And that's my hope. Anybody want that? To just grow wiser? Yeah. Father, teach us that. Teach us that. You know, wisdom is not about information. It includes, or it might include information, but wisdom is not primarily about information. And it's not just about learning. Think about this about in regards to information. Every minute, this is not every hour, this is not every day, this is not every month. Every minute, 18.1 million texts are sent. Every minute. And every minute, 4.5 million videos are viewed on YouTube. Now, some of them are just nonsense, but some of them are really helpful. I repaired my generator by watching a YouTube video. I mean, all kinds of stuff. You can learn almost, I mean, you know, don't do baby delivery or heart surgery or anything like that from YouTube, okay? Because you can find those on there. Just don't do that. That would not be what? Wise, okay? But there's great stuff on YouTube. We talk about, this one just astounds me because of my two boys that are in California trying to make it into the music industry. There's 100,000 new songs added to the internet every day. 100,000 new songs every single day. That's 70 new songs a minute are added to the internet. How do you ever make it in the music world? You know, it's like, wow, it's just unbelievable. And those are all, you know, all kinds of, you know, genres of music. We talk about being in the information age. We talk about information overload. You guys have heard those terms. Here's an interesting thing that I was reading about just recently. So the new data that's created every day, and uploaded to the internet and, you know, and made available is equivalent to 212 billion DVDs. I mean, we can't even comprehend that. 212. Or another way to look at it is the same amount of data being produced worldwide every 15 minutes is equal to all of the words that have ever been spoken since the beginning of time. Every 15 minutes. So the question becomes then, has this information made us wiser? Has it made us more disciplined? Has it made us more successful? Has it made us the human race? Because one of the lines in there you might have caught where it says that it's to teach us to do what is right, just, and fair. Has all of that information made us live, you know, more right? I don't know if that's even good English, but writerish, you know? Has it done that? I mean, you're probably like me. I know some people that are really, really smart. And matter of fact, they're so smart, they tell you how smart they are. You know what I'm talking about? I mean, they're like, they're geniuses, but they can't let it go that you don't know they're a genius, so they're going to tell you they're a genius so that you know how smart they are. But I know some really, really smart people, but wisdom is not one of the characteristics in their lives. You go, yikes. Like, really? And I see enough people shaking their head to go, you probably know some of them too. And if you're seated next to one, don't make a point of it, okay? Smart and learned is not the same as wise. A college education is not the same as wise. A high school diploma and all that comes with it, that's not the thing that makes wise. Eugene Peterson, who translated or paraphrased the Bibles into the Message, he said this, wisdom is the biblical term for the on earth as it is in heaven, everyday life. Remember going back to the Sermon on the Mount that we were doing, on earth as it is in heaven? See, in the book of Proverbs, there's these kinds of things. Wisdom, as it's described in the book of Proverbs, teaches us about becoming skilled in honoring our parents, leaders, those in authority, about work and faithful and diligent work, about handling money, about governing our sex lives instead of our sex lives governing us, about treating friends and families and strangers with kindness, about eating and drinking in healthy ways, about refining our emotions and our attitudes, and about our words, about seeking the truth and avoiding error. I mean, that's what all of those things are described in the book of Proverbs in the idea of wisdom. Here's the definition that I'm going to work from today. Wisdom, and this is just my own language, so if you don't agree, tell Pastor Darrell, okay? Wisdom is the art of living skillfully and godly in whatever situation we find ourselves. Wisdom is the art of living skillfully and godly in whatever situation we find ourselves. So that's what Proverbs is about, to teach us how to do that. So what is a proverb? You know, that we talk about, this is a book of Proverbs. He collected 3,000 proverbs. What is a proverb? A proverb is a poetic or short or vivid description or pithy statement that helps people remember. I'm going to give you a whole bunch of things here. But it helps a person remember it, but also becomes thought-provoking. And oftentimes it's delivering just some really profound truths. Proverb, the word proverb refers to, it's actually, we're using it in regards to the statements that are made and the statements that are collected in the book of Proverbs. But how it's actually used was of someone who was skilled at some practice. You know, they might have been a skilled carpenter or a skilled blacksmith or a skilled songwriter or a skilled winemaker or whatever it happens to be. That's what the word Proverbs is used a lot of ways in the scriptures in that way. But we refer to it, so if you take those and refer to it, could refer to it as Proverbs are about wise living, living wisely, skillfully living. A proverb, sometimes people get this confused, a proverb is not a promise. Okay, a proverb is not a promise. So the book of Proverbs, there's all kinds of things in it that people want to take as promises, and they're not promises. Okay, there's statements that are made that where someone's observed how life typically goes, and if life goes that way, then the proverb, we could say, comes true. It's not a promise, though. Let me give you one that's oftentimes, you know, in my mind, it's misused. Here's how Proverbs 22, King James Version says this. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Or the New Living Translation says, direct your child onto the right path, and when they are old, they will leave it. And people say, think of it as a promise. I train up my child in the way I'm supposed to go, and then that child's going to go the way he's supposed to go. Okay? Here's the problem. How many of us have raised a child and pointed them in the direction they should go, and they went their own way? Okay, so like most of us. If it was a promise, then all of the hard work, all of the sacrifice, all of the praying, all of those things, that child's going to go in the direction that you laid it out for them to go. Now, if your child goes that way, you should just be rejoicing. Because of all of the times that people do that stuff, and the kid decides they're going to go their own way. Is everybody with me? And it breaks your heart because you go, man, all the stuff we did, all the work we did, all the money we spent, all the prayers, all, and then my kid does what my kid wants to do. And it breaks a parent's heart. And I hope I didn't just pop somebody's bubble that was the promise and you're holding on to. Because what it is it's an observation of how it typically works. You know, you live a good model and you pray and you do all the things you should do. And typically, that person just walks on and continues. Typically. But not always. Not always. And you know, the interesting thing about Proverbs is we don't have the same thing in the English language, this idea of a proverb. We have, the closest thing maybe we could come up with is an aphorism. So an aphorism is a little catchy statement that makes it memorable. Like this, if it ain't broke, see, we all know that aphorism. It's not a proverb, but it's, you know, it's, we know that. Or a penny saved is a penny earned. We know these little aphorisms. Actions speak louder than an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of. Or how about power corrupts and absolute power corrupts? See, we all know these little phrases. They're called aphorisms. But we don't have the same kind of thing in that what we know of as the proverbs. And a proverb is often written, and I'm going to give you some examples here, but a proverb is often written in a way that it trips someone up. You know, I do half of my running on the road and half of my running on trails. And the dilemma of running on trails, I mean, almost never, I don't think I have ever, I got taken down by a dog one time on a run, but other than that, I don't think I've ever fallen on the road running. But on the trails, it's a regular occasion. And I was on the trail last Thursday, not this Thursday, but the Thursday before. And I came home and, you know, I got blood running down my leg and like, what happened? And I, you know, I hit some slime on the side of the trail and down I went. And so tripping up is very common for me. So much so that last summer when my son was doing his 100 miler and I was going to run part of it with him, he said, are you sure, Dad? Because like you fall down a lot. So, you know, you guys know what I'm talking about. Your foot catches a root or whatever it happens to be in your trip, and next thing you know, you're on the ground. Well, a proverb is often written in the exact same way, that you would trip over the truth, and you would stumble, and you'd start to fall, and maybe you would catch yourself in a truth. So that's oftentimes how a proverb is written, is that we would somehow, it would trip us up. Winston Churchill said this. He said, men occasionally stumble over the truth, but most of them pick themselves up and hurry off as if nothing happened. That's not what Proverbs is meant to do. Proverbs is meant to trip us up and then go, wow, I need this changed in my life. I need some rearrangement on this in my life. So let me give you some. And I just picked a scattering of them. A fool is quick-tempered, but a wise person stays calm when insulted. That's meant to trip us up. I get insulted. Someone says something that's insulting. Do I respond quickly and jump back and, you know, go back after them? Is that what I do? Or do I just react calmly? They insulted me, you know. Does everybody get the picture? Or how about this one? A person without self-control is like a city broken down with broken down walls. This is meant to trip up a person who lacks self-control. And it just trips them up. And they go, oh, man, there I did it again. And they would say, Lord, transform me in this. Or how about this one? A quarrelsome wife is annoying as a constant dripping on a rainy day. Now, you wives are all thinking, why didn't you pick one about husbands? I couldn't find one. If you're a woman and you can find one about a husband, let me know and I'll use it. But I couldn't find one. The only one I could find was about a... Oh, my wife's got her hand up. What's that? I don't know. Oh. That was my wife. Did you guys all hear that? She wanted to know why the roof was constantly dripping. Meaning the husband never got it fixed. So, good one, sweetie. I was going to embarrass her today, but I decided I wasn't going to embarrass her today. But now I'm going to embarrass her today. It's my wife's birthday today. It's not going to be a fun day at home now that I embarrassed her. If you know my wife, she does not like those kinds of things. So anyway, let's move on. Ecclesiastes 12, Solomon, the same Solomon said this, the words of the wise are like cattle prods, painful but helpful. Their collected sayings are like a nail-studded stick with which shepherds drive the sheep. That these wise sayings, the Proverbs and the other wise sayings, they're meant to be like a cattle prod. They go, you know, and I've used a lot of cattle prods. Most of the ones I've used have been electric cattle prod. And you know, there's a rule using a cattle prod. Jim, you'll know this, the rule of cattle prod. The rule of the cattle prod, if it doesn't work for the first time, just do it harder and do it longer. Okay? I mean, I've been in chutes, you know, the bull's going down the chute. He doesn't want to go to the chute because he knows what's happening on the other end of the chute. And you start cattle prodding, he's backing up, and you just keep using it. Well, the proverb is meant to be that way. If you don't get it the first time, it's going to try to get you the second time. If you don't get it the second time, it's going to try and get you the third time. Until, unless we just go, yeah, I don't get it, I'm not interested. It's supposed to be like a cattle prod. And sometimes the Proverbs are not easy to understand. And sometimes they're hard to understand. Like, let me give you an example. And I don't know how far I'm going to get in this. So if I stop kind of just like, wow, that was a weird stop, just bear with me, because I'm not sure how far I'm going to get in my notes. But here's a couple of Proverbs that just, you go, what? You kind of scratch your head like, what does that mean? Proverbs 24, these verses are back to back. Don't answer the foolish arguments of fools, or you'll become as foolish as they are. Makes sense, right? This makes sense. Don't, you know, if you've got this foolish person who's got a foolish argument going on, well, just leave it alone. And then it goes on to say, but be sure to answer the foolish arguments of fools, or they will become wise in their own estimation. Wait a second. You just told us not to get in an argument with a fool, and now you're telling us to answer a fool. Which is it? What do we do here? And it could be like, okay, I don't get it. And is he having a bad day, you know, when he collected these? But these two are meant to be juxtaposed to each other. That's what's meant to happen here. Let me help you understand this. On one hand, he's saying about this fool, if this fool, this person who's listening, if they're not going to be corrected by the truth that you want to give them, then don't get in the argument with them. So part of it, and you know, people are like, don't judge. No, these are verses about judging. These are verses about you determining, is this person who's saying this stuff right now, if I get in this discussion with this person, is this person going to learn from this, or is this person not going to learn from it? If they're not going to learn from it, he says, leave it alone. If they're going to learn from it, then get into it with them. Discuss it with them. You know, banter back and forth, whatever that happens to be. It's about judging. Is a person teachable? Is a person want to learn? Does a person want to grow? Then engage them. If they don't, then just leave it alone, because you're not going to make any progress with them. You just walk away. Don't engage in the argument with them. Another thing that could be pointed out from this is some of us, by nature, we like to get in arguments with people. Okay, like this is a true confession time, not a partial confession time, but a true. Anybody like getting in arguments with people? Okay, so we got three people that are telling the truth. Okay? Or maybe not. Maybe everybody's telling the truth. But there's other people that are wired, they don't like getting in arguments, they'll do everything they can to avoid arguments. But here's the reality is sometimes the person who likes to get in arguments should not get in arguments, but the person who doesn't like to argue, there's times they should open their mouth and say something. And you need to know which one it is. You need to know, is this a time I should open my mouth, or is this a time I should keep my mouth shut? That's what he's talking about. And so there's something you have to chew on. There's something you have to think through. There's something you kind of got to work through to try and figure out, okay, what is going on in these Proverbs? See, Proverbs are not meant to be sped through. The book of Proverbs, there's 800 of them. It's not meant to be sped through. Like okay, I got my chapter done today. Well, if you just get your chapter done today, which I'm going to encourage you to read a chapter, you know, read it over the summer multiple times. But if you just read your chapter, you're missing out, because they're not meant to be sped through. Tim Keller, the pastor from New York. He's passed away now. Redeemer Presbyterian Church in New York City, who's passed away. But he said this. He said a proverb, I love this. He said a proverb is like a hard candy. If you just bite down on it, you get little out of it and maybe even a broken tooth. But instead, you must meditate on it until the sweetness of insight comes. That's what a proverb is meant to be. It's this thing you suck on. And you suck on it, and you chew on it, and you meditate on it, and you just think on it, and you mull it over, and you play, you know, just like what is he talking about here? And you just go over and over and over. And over time, what ends up happening is you get what Proverbs is talking about. You can begin to get what Proverbs are talking about. Let me just look at my notes. I think I can finish in 5 minutes. So, and in the book of Proverbs, there's two words that are used really common. One of them is the word simple, and one of them is the word fool in the modern English translations. One is the fool and one is simple. Simple is used 14 different times in the New Living Translation. And the idea is not a simple person. We think about it in regards to a person who's maybe mentally slow, maybe has some struggles in life. That's how we oftentimes use that word. You know, there's a simple person. But what in the scriptures, what it's talking about a person who's inexperienced, a person who hasn't learned yet, a person who hasn't figured it out yet, a person who hasn't gone through the experience, so they don't know what that experience looks like, what that person experience feels like. That's what it's talking about. I'll give you some more in just a second. And then the word fool is actually used 71 times in the New Living Translation in the book of Proverbs. And where the simple talks about someone who hasn't learned or inexperienced, they don't got it figured out yet, a fool refers to someone who says, I know. You ever talk to someone and they go, I know. Like, I didn't finish my sentence. I know. What do we call them? What did someone say? No, we call them a know-it-all. Yeah, sometimes. Some says I know, or the person who Plato described in Republic, where he said, I'm trying to think, don't confuse me with the facts. That's thousands of years old. Doesn't matter what the truth is. They know what's best. You rarely hear that person say, oh, I was wrong. Oh, maybe I got that wrong. And a fool is someone who gets angry because others don't agree with them. You start having a discussion. Next thing you know, they're angry. Fool. I mean, you could just let the idiot light. Fool. And a fool, what do? Don't engage them. What did it say? If they're not going to learn, don't engage them. And the Bible has a lot to say. And teaching a fool, where you can teach a simple. All kinds of scriptures talk about training a simple person. Right at the very beginning, we read it about to train a simple person these things. But a fool, it says things like this: don't waste your breath on fools, for they will despise the wisest advice. Again, you're making a judgment on someone, but like, they're not going to learn. They don't really want to engage in this discussion. They don't really want to, look at this topic a different way. And the scriptures Proverbs would refer to them and say, they're foolish. So just leave it alone. And for a person to learn, as they learn wisdom, one of the things that happens is learning prudence and self-discipline. The idea is that Proverbs, learning these things would make us more cautious in life. Now, I'm not talking about cautious versus risk aversion, risk aversion. I'm talking about prudence and cautious in regards to what we're thinking, what we're saying, how we're responding, how we're reacting. That's what I'm talking about here. Or it would make us cautious in our decision making. There's throughout the book of Proverbs, these are my words, but throughout the book of Proverbs, there's this idea that, I say it oftentimes this way: make a pre-decision so you don't have to make the decision. Sometimes it's said as preload your decisions, is how sometimes business people talk about it. Preload your decision. And if you've preloaded your decision, then when the moment comes, you don't have to make a decision. Okay? Give you some illustrations, just some simple ones. Like a pre-decision would be wearing a life jacket. One of my pet peeves. One of my buddies, I've said, you die from drowning without a life jacket on, I am not doing your funeral, I'm not even sure I'm going. You die in a car accident, I'll be there, I'll do it. Or bicycle helmets, or motorcycle helmets, or seat belts. I mean, those are all silly, but they're pre-decisions. You don't have to make the decision when the crisis comes. Or how about this? How about to take a different route home? If you're a commuter, like this guy I worked with one time, he would regularly stop off at, either Cozy's or the Legion Hall for a drink after work. And I said, you know what? And he's like, I don't know how to stop this. I said, take a different route. When you get off the ferry, turn, go up the hill, Deer Lake Road, go over to Cultus Bay Road, take the back road to Campbell Road, Ewing Road, and it'll take you to your house, kind of thing. Because you drive, if that is pulling at you, you drive there, it's going to pull at you. There's a magnetic pull for you to stop there. Does that make sense? So just make the pre-decision. You know, I heard someone this week talk about they make the pre-decision when they're out with some people that they have the first drink, but the second drink, they've already decided, second drink, I will always ask for a Coke. I'll always ask for a Coke. And they said, you know what? I never overdrink because of that. They make a pre-decision. They front-load the decision. See, the prudent, here's what Proverbs says, the prudent understand where they're going, but the fool deceives themselves. The prudent goes, I'm going in a direction, this is going to be there. And a fool goes, I can do this. I can do this. And they pull right in. Or it says this, fools make fun of guilt, but godly people acknowledge it and seek reconciliation. Fools have no interest in understanding. They only want to air their opinions. One time a business guy from the community came to see me, and he'd been with his sales team on a trip to another part of the state, and it was to work on this national deal that he was working on. And they went one day, they had, you know, the meeting and dinner and so on, and he went early to bed. And the next morning they show up, and the people that they're, you know, kind of courting or trying to work this deal with, and his team all showed up to breakfast except two people, a man and a woman. And he's like, where's so-and-so? Where's so-and-so? And he said, I'm sitting there in this meeting, and I realize my salesperson spent the night with that woman from the other company. And he said, Matt, what do I do about it? I said, you know what you need to do? You need to train your employees to make pre-decisions. Because if he made a pre-decision to say, when my boss gets up from the table and goes to the hotel room, that's my signal, get up from the table and go to your hotel room. And they will not. Is everybody with me? You make these pre-decisions. Or how about this one? You turn on safe search on Google. Now, if you don't know there's a safe search on Google, call me. I will show you how to turn it on. It doesn't eliminate everything, but it eliminates 90% of anything that you don't want to see. Oh, I can handle it. If you could handle it, you would have already handled it. You can't handle it. That's why you need to turn safe search on. Everybody with me? I mean, just So let me wrap this up. Do you want to become wise? Do you want to live wisely? Do you need more discernment? Do you need more discipline? Do you need help living right, just, and fair? Those are all of the things that we'd read about at the beginning. Then Proverbs is the book for you. Proverbs is the book for you. Now, I'll give you two exercises. Take this summer and read through Proverbs. There's 31 chapters in the book of Proverbs, and July 31, August 31. I mean, if you started even late, just go home. Don't read Proverbs 1. Just go home today and read Proverbs chapter 9. And then 9, 10, the next, like that. But also, here's the other part of it. So go home, read Proverbs. Read it over throughout the summer. Here's the other thing. I put a box of little note cards out in the foyer. And just take a handful of them, three or four of them, whatever, five or six, whatever you want to take. And every day when you're, like today, I read Proverbs chapter 9 today, and when you read it, just grab a verse that you kind of stumble over, you know, that kind of trips you up. And make that the verse you suck on, you know, like the hard candy Tim Keller was talking about. Make that the verse you just suck on for the day. You know, tomorrow, turn it over, write a verse on the other side, and just writing it will help you remember some of the stuff in it. But then, you know, just tuck it in your pocket, tuck it in your purse, throw it on your dashboard, whatever it happens to be, and just chew on it. Just chew on it. The question is, do you want to become wise? Because if you want to be wise, you'll do the things necessary to become wise. I mean, you can say you want to be wise, but saying you want to be wise and working to become wise are two different things, right? It's like buying exercise clothes doesn't make you exercise. Okay? Everybody get the idea? So just grab some. Just grab some and do that. Here's Proverbs 12, or 9:12. This is the one I grabbed today. If you become wise, you will be the one to benefit. If you scorn wisdom, you will be the one to suffer. Which do you want to be? Let's stand together. I got through it. Well, Lord, my objective, and I believe it's your objective, and I know it's the objective of everyone who said, you know, they'll help teach throughout the summer to give me a little bit of a break now and then, that we want to be wise. And we want to help our church to become wise. We want to help everyone here and everyone online. We want them to become better and more skillful at living wise and godly lives. So open our hearts, open our spirits. Lord, if we tend towards being a fool, do a work inside of us so that we could go from being a fool to being someone who does the wisest thing and become wise. So throughout this summer, Lord, grow our church, grow us as families, grow us as couples, grow us as individuals, grow us to be people who skillfully learn how to live wise lives. In Jesus' name, amen. God bless you. Go enjoy the sunshine. Our leadership team will be up here ready to pray if anybody needs prayer. Thank you for joining us today here in the room. Thanks for joining us online. God bless you.